Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello, everybody out there in Avalanche land. Welcome to Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast presented by Superbook Sports. JJ Jerez here, Arif Dean, and as promised, we have another special guest in our summer series. We're just touring the Avs press box here during our summer podcast here. So Jesse Montano of DMVR, welcome to the show. How you doing? And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I was supposed to be on a couple weeks ago, but I kind of blew you guys off at the last second. My schedule's just so busy these days.
We didn't promise anybody anything, so nobody knew that. Don't worry.
I was glad we were able to figure something out. Heading out of town tomorrow, so I was glad we were able to jump on before. And we all kind of saw each other a few weeks ago at a little get together, and it was nice to see you guys. So I just always appreciate being able to chat with you guys. So a lot to talk about too in Avsland this week. They did us some favors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As they tend to do. And of course, Jesse, you're heading out of town to Nashville to go, cover the draft. So we'll get to that later in the podcast. But as you mentioned, it's summertime. You know, I don't know if you guys like to swim, but the Avalanche made a cannonball size splash, in my opinion. Ayo. Big news yesterday, Ryan Johansson coming to the Avalanche and Nashville retaining half of his salary, which I think was big time. But I guess let's just get into simply Ryan Johansson at first. What do you think the upside is to bringing him to the Avalanche? What does he bring to the team to really contribute and be productive? We'll start with Jesse. Arif, you can go next.
Cool.
I was pretty floored when I got the text yesterday morning that they had brought him in. This wasn't really someone, I think we had maybe mentioned him kind of in passing. It wasn't really someone that I had earmarked as a potential solution for them. But look, this is a guy who's brought into Nashville. I believe it was back in 2016. He'd had a couple good years in Columbus. They were looking for him to be their first line center. Just never really got there. Nashville's had to make some other moves, bringing in guys like Matt Duchene to try to cover up for that. Had the leg injury last year, but he's two seasons removed from having a top three season for himself in terms of production. So this is a guy that you are definitely taking a little bit of a gamble on. But Arif, I think you had a piece out, I think it was this morning or last night, that was essentially saying like, yeah, it's a gamble, but what you paid, what you gave up, it's totally worth it. You held on to a bunch of your assets. I said it yesterday, I think it was on Instagram. If you're looking for him to come in and be a 70-point guy, like his kind of career high, you're going to be disappointed. That's not what he is. He's a middle six guy, second line center at this point. But I think this is a really nice bit of business by Chris McFarland. And you're bringing in a guy, you can at least put the 2C conversation to bed for right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way that I look at this deal, for starters, like, full marks to Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland and the entire staff that, like, Jesse, I spent 3 weeks trying to pinpoint every possible name because they do this every single time. They do it every single time. Everybody. Yeah. I remember back in 2019, it was like, oh, Chris Kreider, Mika Zibanejad, before his breakout. And then it ended up being like Donskoy, Burakovsky, a Kadri trade out of nowhere. Right. Like, you try to pinpoint the guys you think the Avalanche are going to target, then they throw a Devon Taves at you. And I tried so hard to think of every, like, I even galaxy brained, like, Shane Pinto is a third line center in Ottawa and their top two centers are signed. I galaxy brained Montreal's going to get Dubois. So maybe Kirby Dach doesn't want to be there. Like, I tried to think of every possible name. And they still got a guy that didn't even cross. You said it. You mentioned it in passing. I give you props. I didn't even think.
The reason we kind of glossed right over it was the $8 million. We were just kind of like what you're saying. We were just sitting there like trying to go through second line centers, like not even guys that we thought were on the move. Just like who out there. And I think someone was like Ryan Johansson, but we were like, no, $8 million.
Shut up, idiot.
Yeah. Right. don't give me too much credit because we blew it off as quickly as the name came up. We were like, boo, no, not gonna happen. but again, it was the $8 million, and that was what made the 50% retention so key. And that's, I have to imagine, what it is that got this over the finish line.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the way Evan put it. He tweeted yesterday. He said, it's as if the Avalanche gave Ryan Johansson a 2-year, $8 million contract. And when you look at the UFA market, JT Compher is one of the top centers. We know that doesn't work as a number 2C. Ryan O'Reilly's there, but you know he's going to, at his age, get 3, 4, maybe even 5 years at a very similar number. I would assume more than 4, but maybe in the 5.5 range. But regardless, every dollar counts right now for this team.
Yeah.
So it is a worthy gamble because, first of all, what you're getting out of Ryan Johansson is, so yes, there are some injuries there, and that's something that cannot be overlooked. But the dude is 6'3". He's almost 220 pounds. I know you said that, Nashville wanted him to be a number one center. It never really worked out. It did for about 9 months, and it was the year they made the final. In 2017.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, he only had 60 something points, but that's the kind of team they've always had there. They never had him put up 80, 90, and he was exceptional in the playoffs. I don't know if you remember the Ryan Johansson, Ryan Kessler rivalry.
Yes, dude. Now that you say that,
there's actually, if any of you guys follow the Chicklets account on Instagram, there was a post that I saw where somebody, it was basically the Chicklets account put up the trade and was like, thoughts on the trade. And somebody tweeted and somebody like responded to the message on Instagram and was like, at Ryan Kessler, I thought you owned Ryan Johansson. And he responded and said, yeah, he's on loan to the Avalanche for a couple of years. I thought that was hilarious. But I think back to that 2017 run that Ryan Johansson had. And I know it was 6 years ago, but that's what this guy can bring in the postseason. That's the kind of game he plays. And if you're talking about a second line that's going to have Val Nichushkin and Ryan Johansson on it, it's a lot of meat. That's a lot of size on one line.
I mean, dude, if you wanted to run, even if it's not something that you'd run regularly, but a Nichushkin, Johansson, Rantanen, like that is, to your point, that's a lot of man to have to handle. Those are big bodies that can, play along the wall. Mikko Rantanen embracing his size more than we've ever seen this past season. Again, I like this one, and my favorite part about it, obviously the 50% retention, but we were talking, this entire offseason, now it's already a couple months old, about, man, for the Avs to solve this 2C problem, are they going to have to move that first round pick, Sam Girard? Are you talking Devon Taves? What are you going to do to solve this issue? They get this done and they hold on to every trade chip that they've got. They could still do something with that first round pick between now and Wednesday. If you are wanting to get into the Sam Girard, Devon Taves trade conversation, you still have those assets. All of your prospects, you held on to all of them. So if you are needing, if this isn't working out come, midway point trade deadline, well, you still have a lot of those assets to try to go out and resolve this. If Ryan Johansson, if the injuries are too much, et cetera, et cetera.
Not only that, considering the strategy they used of the 50% retention, I mean, considering a bunch of teams are in cap trouble right now and the free agent market just isn't as special as you'd like it to be, it seems like they've cracked a code for finding some almost creative ways to get these players over here. So I can fully see them pulling this trick out of their sleeve a couple more times before the offseason's over rather than tackling the free agent market exclusively.
It's the perfect balance to me of what Ryan Johansson is from a Nashville perspective and from a Colorado perspective. Because, let's say, for example, last year, the Calgary Flames signed Nazem Kadri. In order to make it work, they took Sean Monahan $6 million, crumpled it up into a ball and attached a first round draft pick to it and launched it over to Montreal. So Montreal ate the entire cap, but took a first rounder with it. When Max Pacioretty was traded to Carolina, same thing. When Marc-Andre Fleury was traded to Chicago, same thing in terms of take the entire cap space, take them for free. there was a nice middle ground here with Johansson where Nashville can eat half of it without asking for anything. Colorado can take the player without asking for anything because they're not taking the whole salary. And it was just like a perfect marriage. We'll say $4 million. Mm-hmm. We get a second line center for $4 million. Most importantly, only 2 years. No attachment to this. You know, I often think back to the day the Avalanche, the writing was on the wall that Ryan O'Reilly was going to get traded. They traded for Carl Soderberg and gave him like a 5-year deal right off the bat. And I'm like, all right, well, this guy's staying around. It didn't feel like that. It feels like a stopgap in every sense of the word for a player that is going to give you, you know, pretty much the kind of production you need from a second line center. I mean, JT Compher gave you in the regular season the production you need from a second line center. It was in the playoffs where it didn't translate. But this is a player that has historically been better in the playoffs than the regular season. So even if he gives you what JT gave you a year ago or what Kadri gave you in 2019, in 2020 and 2021, 30 something points and 50 something games, you're hoping for that translation into the playoffs, that big body, that physical mean mucking style. And you got exactly what you need from a 2C.
Well, and Eric, you made a couple good points there. One about, you know, it not feeling super long-term. I like the 2 years because it doesn't feel like, oh, if this goes well, you're going to have to extend him right away. And do you get ahead of that now? So I like the term on it. Second, what you mentioned, because it's not too long-term, it leaves the door open for a guy like Alex Newhook. If he can ever get his footing the way that the Avs are hoping he can and maybe work his way into that second line center role. Stopgap, I think, is a perfect word for this Ryan Johansson thing, because it's not, you're not blocking anybody behind him. If Alex Newhook has the breakout that Avs management is hoping he will, that he definitely didn't have this last season, then cool, you can put him there and you don't feel too bad about dropping Ryan Johansson down if that's the route you want to go. And then the last thing about it that I just found so interesting, you know, Nazem Kadri, when he left, the conversation was, it's going to be really hard to find someone to fill that role, especially in the dollar figure range that you were paying Nazem Kadri. The Avs run a really good deal. I'm not saying Ryan Johansson is going to be as effective as Nazem Kadri was in Colorado, but you somehow found a solution. You got cheaper from 1-2C to the next. You got cheaper at that position. And that's just where you really have to like this bit of business. Again, the jury's still out. There's question marks, no doubt, on Ryan Johansson. But the fact that they essentially, obviously you had last year where the injuries were a factor anyways, but you go from Nazem Kadri at 4 point whatever to Ryan Johansson at $4 million, like that's just good business in your top six. And then you mentioned JT Compher. Ryan Johansson is without doubt, no matter how you feel about the two players, he is more offensively gifted than JT Compher, full stop. I like JT Compher. I think it'd benefit the Avs if they could bring him back. But to your point, Compher filled in that spot admirably, more than admirably, during the regular season, had a good productive year. You're about to drop a guy there who's got better size, has played that role before, and just has more offensive touch. I think there's plenty of reason to feel confident that he's going to be able to slide into that role and do it just as well as anybody the Avs have had.
Yeah, I mean, until you draft and develop your own guy or trade for a younger guy like Kirby Dach or something, and obviously the draft and develop is Newhook, they found, like you said, that sweet spot for a 2C. You know, Kadri 4.5, then Compher was 3.5. Granted, he was kind of slotted in because they had no other options. And then $4 million for Johansson. It's the exact dollar amount. And, you know, Nathan MacKinnon's contract is more than doubling or just about doubling this year. Mm-hmm. I've been saying it for years, and it kind of is almost exactly what ended up happening. You take the Eric Johnson salary, you give it to Nathan MacKinnon, and then you plug and play the rest of the way.
Yeah.
The cool thing for me, I talked to JJ about this yesterday. The Avalanche still need another top six forward. Whether they're going to bank on Alex Newhook being the guy, whether they're going to bank, you know, being a winger, I should say, whether they're going to bank on bringing back Evan Rodriguez or something like that. They have a little bit of money to play with. And if they can find a way to fit somebody, let's say, oh, I don't know, $3 million. Well, now when the offseason started, you had a little bit of cap space and all these things to fill. 2 weeks into the offseason, you found out Gabe Landeskog's gone. If you manage to take Gabe Landeskog's $7 million and turn it into his replacement plus Ryan Johansson at $7 million, you have the rest of the salary cap that you started the offseason with to fill in the rest of the roster, and you can still go to the Sam Girard well if you want to clear $5 million, which I don't recommend you do unless, obviously, you find a good replacement for him too. But it just seems like in one swift move, the offseason just looks a lot more clear for the Avalanche.
Totally.
Tons more work to do.
So absolutely a lot more work to do, but you know, you mentioned the Gabe Landeskog salary, moving that to LTIR. If you go look at Cap Friendly right now, it does not reflect Gabe Landeskog's $7 million available to the Abs, which it will be. He will be LTIR'd for this season. With the 2C position more or less settled for right now, you have to get Alex Newhook RFA deal done, Bowen Byram RFA deal done. You probably need one more bottom six forward and then one more defenseman. You got $14 million to play with. For everything I just listed, that should be more than enough to fill in, to get those two RFAs signed and then to fill in around the fringes with quality players, including a top six winger. I'm with you, Arif. I think they put themselves in a good spot with this move.
Well, Jesse, when you were first breaking down Ryan Johansson, you said something that really stood out to me. So I have a question for you. You said he's your 2C for right now. So does that mm-hmm. mean that, A, you think that they're going to still make some moves, maybe bring in someone better, or B, there's a little seed of doubt that you think maybe Ryan Johansson doesn't completely fit in that second center role?
I think they're done in terms of looking for a 2C for right now. I think opening night, Ryan Johansson is your second line center. Part of the reason I say for now, one, it's the injuries. We got to see how his health holds up. He's coming off, I believe it was Achilles tendon surgery this last year. We have every reason to believe that he'll be back. He'll be fine. He's healed up, that he should be able to jump right back into things. But just a little bit of a caveat there, a guy who has had some injury issues in the past. And then my other thing is just if for some reason it doesn't work, you know, I mean, again, I don't have any reason to think he won't. His underlying numbers are solid. He's got an entire career that says this is right in the range of player that he is. You're not asking him to overextend and take first line reps. But I just say that for the for now, in case the injuries don't work or if he just doesn't gel with this group. He's played in Nashville now for 7 or 8 seasons. That's a very, very defensive heavy structure. I mean, you know, we saw the adjustments with Josh Manson when he got to town last year. I mean, literally just making plays to guys who weren't there. It's going to be an adjustment for Ryan Johansson. If he can't get that to work, the Avs still have some options. And then I do also just consider Alex Newhook. Like, I don't want to fully write him off. This last season was definitely a little disappointing. But that guy could take a step, and suddenly you've got this kind of battle there in your top six, which is a good problem for the Avs to have.
I mean, when the Avalanche first traded for Nazem Kadri, coming off of another suspension, coming off a season where John Tavares joined the Leafs and he was a 3C, this is a guy that was in his late 20s. I believe he was 29 when he made his debut with the Avalanche. And, you know, they had brought in Nichushkin, Donskoy, Burakovsky. Those were the three wingers they brought in that same summer. But if you remember the start of training camp, it wasn't Donskoy on the second line. It was Tyson Jost at left wing.
Yeah,
Nazem Kadri at center and then Berkey on the right. And the reason why I bring that up, it goes back to why I just said maybe they're banking on trying Newhook at left wing, is Kadri was the same thing. When they brought in Kadri, we could have had this exact same conversation.
Totally.
And Jesse could have said Nazem Kadri's the 2C right now. And it's not that you're, you know, kind of thinking he might fail, but it's you got right. this kid waiting in the wings wearing number 17 that you think is going to be the guy. Let's stick him on his wing and let's kind of develop him into that role. It obviously didn't end up happening. Jost left before Kadri. Kadri left too. You're kind of starting over again with another, instead of a 29-year-old, a 31-year-old. Instead of 3 years, it's 2 years. Instead of Jost, it's Newhook. And you're kind of banking on Johansson handing the baton to Newhook the way you thought Kadri would to Tyson Joe. So that's kind of the way that I see it. I think Johansson's mm-hmm. going to be fine. If Newhook breaks out, you know, this is why I loved the idea of Nick Schmaltz this entire time. Granted, it's a bigger dollar and a bigger commitment in terms of, you know, term actually, is the fact that someone like Schmaltz can play the wing as well. And he actually does right now. He's a right winger on that line with Hayton and Keller. And the reason why I like that is because if or when Alex Newhook jumps in, you shift this guy over. But with Johansson, you can just drop him down a 3C. $4 million right. isn't terrible. Or maybe Johansson puts up 45 points this year, but Newhook puts up 65. And next summer, you're like, hey, Johansson still got value. Trade him somewhere else or even flip him to a 3C. Mm-hmm. Like, you have options as long as Johansson doesn't completely fall off the rails. And I'm not talking just like plays 50 game, puts up 30 points. I'm talking like Jeff Skinner, his second year in Buffalo, like completely collapses. Unless that happens, the Avalanche have a player that if they need to move him in a year has value starting at $4 million before even retaining anything.
Well, and I saw a tweet yesterday. I don't remember who it was, but you know, because there were definitely some people that didn't like the move. How can they think this is a 2C? And there was a comment that said, people, I think, don't fully realize that most teams out there have a 1C and a 2C. There's been a couple teams recently that have kind of felt like a 1AC and a 1B. And I think you can make the argument that at least in Nazem Kadri's last year here, the Stanley Cup year, while I still don't think he was really kind of close to Nathan MacKinnon, he could have been a 1C on most teams the way he played that year. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of what Avs fans have in their head right now. We need a guy who can be a first line center on most teams to be our second line center. That is not how most teams are built. That's not even how most cup champions, you know, I mean, you could make the argument Chandler Stephenson had a really good year. That's a pretty solid 2C. I don't think there's many teams where you're putting Chandler Stephenson in the first line center position and feeling good about it. So the most recent Stanley Cup champion had a pretty clear Jack Eichel at one, Chandler Stephenson's your second line center. That's what the Avs are trying to get. We're trying to get someone who's a bona fide second line center, can be very effective in his matchups. You know, big body, can cycle, can do things well that we don't do well, and things that he doesn't do well, we can fold him into our mix. That's what the Avs are looking for. The 2022 Cup champ team was a bit of an anomaly. Go back a pretty far way. It is hard to find a team that complete as that 22 Avs team. So tempering expectations, I think, is one thing that Avs fans need to do after being a little bit spoiled by the Nazem Kadri 80-plus point season at second line center.
Yeah. I think there's just a lot to be said for a change of scenery for a guy like this. I mean, I hate to go cross sport here, but like, you know, Ryan Johansson had a lot of weight on his shoulders in Nashville, right? I mean, he was a fan favorite. They had a lot of expectations for him. You look at the Nuggets, right? And again, this is where I go cross sport. The Denver Nuggets had a guy on their roster, Aaron Gordon, who on his former team in Orlando was the guy, had tons of pressure on his shoulders and had, you know, had to carry the offense most nights. Comes to Denver, all that weight is taken off. Now he just has to contribute, has to play his role, and becomes, you know, less of a star and more of a role player. I think that's exactly what happens with Ryan Johansson, right? He doesn't have that weight on his shoulders to be the main producer anymore, to come on the power play and put up some goals. He doesn't have that. And now he just has to go out there and be adequate and, you know, make his plays, make his passes and contribute some points here and there. And he's going to be just fine. I don't think he has that same responsibility that he had in Nashville here.
Yeah, I mean, so, that's 100% true. Sorry, I was going to say that's 100% true. Yeah. And that's kind of what they're banking on, I think, is the fact that you're taking a player from a different team that had a different kind of role, putting him here, relaxing him a little bit. You know, we're looking at you, Jack Eichel, with mm-hmm. Vegas, just relaxing mm-hmm. him a little bit, let him, yeah. you know, just slot in and do his thing.
This maybe isn't the best comparable because his career, like, he hasn't won anything. But I was just thinking of Matt Duchene when you were saying all that, JJ. Like, in Colorado, you know, he was originally drafted to be, like, the next guy. He makes his debut on Joe Sakic night, and there was definitely just that air about it where it was like, hey, man, be the next Joe Sakic. And you can tell that he just never thrived in that pressure. Nathan MacKinnon gets to town. Now suddenly there's another, you know, competing face of the franchise, the new kind of, because even with Ryan O'Reilly, Gabe Landeskog, like, Matt Duchene was still like the scorer. He was still the offensive guy. Well, now Nathan MacKinnon's in town, and you could just tell that pressure built to a point where it didn't work. Goes to Ottawa, same kind of pressure. You were the missing link. We were one shot away from the Stanley Cup final. We gave up the farm to get you. Get us there. The pressure was just too much. He's in Nashville now where they, and you know, that's part of the reason why they're having to tear it down. They just had too many dudes. Like, they didn't have the one guy that really separated. Well, now that they've kind of, you know, restructured that, we've seen the last couple seasons with Duchene. He's really taken off from a production standpoint. He had almost 100-point season. He scored 40 goals now multiple times. And it's because I feel like he doesn't have that pressure of go save the franchise. Similar thing here. Hey, in fact, we want you, Ryan Johansson, to be in the shadows. We want you to play behind Nathan MacKinnon. We want you to feast on secondary matchups. We want you on the power play. We don't want you to be the main trigger man. We want you in the bumper spot, taking up space in front of the net. You don't like nothing needs to fall on you. Just go out there and play. I think that's a great call out, JJ, that I think players like this benefit from this maybe more than anybody else.
In terms of production, I wholeheartedly agree. I think that this is going to be an opportunity for him to produce more. It's the one that kind of worries me is the injuries, especially yep. given this one. The tendon injury is always a tough one to come back from. But it's a risk worth taking. The money, the term, everything about it. Again, I'm going to go back to Nazem Kadri. When the Avalanche got him that 2019 season, he was a third line center for Toronto behind Matthews and Tavares. He only scored 16 goals. He put up 0.6 points per game. Ryan Johansson here, obviously in 55 games, 28, put up 0.51. Their power play production was right around the same. You have 10 power play points from Johansson. You got 13 from Nazem Kadri, and Johansson had more power play goals. Their ice time was within 20 seconds of each other. Johansson had a better shooting percentage, but fewer shots. Johansson, 59% faceoffs, Kadri, 55. You're almost bringing in that same type of player. Yep. Again, 28-year-old season versus 30-year-old season. So right around the same time as well. The injury thing is the one that kind of can be a little bit can give you pause, especially how long it's going to take him to kind of shake the cobwebs off after that 12-week recovery. But in terms of production, changing up the scenery, changing up the role, coming in here and just being Ryan Johansson, the second line center that people are going to forget about real quick, is yep. going to be very easy for him to kind of transition, I think.
Well, and the Avs now have a track record of taking players like this and helping them either get back to the level they used to be or to that next level, starting with Nazem Kadri, Devon Taves, Arturi Lehkonen, you know, obviously Val Nichushkin's the big example. But I mean, like, you can just kind of go through this roster here, and there are a lot of guys that they have brought in that have been, you know, good players when they got here. And then a year later, it's just a completely different story. It's another great point, Eric. There's a little bit of a revisionist history on the Kadri thing because it ended so much better than when he got here. When he got here, there were a lot of like, okay, but he needs to step this level back up. He's been playing third line center. He needs to get back to where he was when he was scoring 30 goals. He was not coming off an ultra productive season when the Avs acquired him. And it was, okay, you can't have a repeat of that last year. There were a lot of question marks when he got to town that were all gone by the time he left.
Yeah. And the big thing for me with Kadri, there was a tweet I saw Peter Ball was doing like a Q&A on Twitter and responding to tweets last year, right around the trade deadline. And somebody asked, like, would the Avs really be crazy enough to go into the playoffs with JT Compher? And obviously, in hindsight, we saw it didn't really work out. And there was a lot of factors to that. But in the regular season, Peter made a really good point. He responded to a tweet and he said JT Compher's production in 2023 is better than Nazem Kadri's was in 2020 and 2021 in the regular season in terms of points per game. Wow. So, you know, take out the 2022 season. Did we ever in 20 or 21 question Nazem Kadri as a 2C? No, we're just like,
that's
yeah,
a great question.
This is a guy that's going to give you roughly 50 points and be a beast in the playoffs. And Peter Baugh's argument was, well, JT Compher has given you better production than that. Nazem Kadri wasn't on pace for 52 points in either of those two seasons. JT did that a year ago. Obviously, it didn't translate into the playoff. Again, he didn't have the wingers. Val disappeared. Landeskog didn't play. Like, a whole bunch of things went into that with the Avalanche's depth and just the team that was exhausted mentally and physically. But when you look at Ryan Johansson, if Ryan Johansson gives you 48 regular season points, first of all, that's a good thing because that means he played at least 48 games, which means a lot of injuries. But number two, you're going into the playoffs. You just need him to ramp it up the way Kadri did in two of three playoff years, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, because in 2020, let's not forget how good he was. And what you saw from JT Compher the year before last year when he was thrusted into that 2C role. So when you know, any way you shake it, I think the Avalanche, you know, to kind of put a bow on this, like they did a good thing here. Does it have risk? Absolutely. I think totally. It would take a lot to go wrong for this to be a situation where you end up like, let's say Toronto with Matt Murray right now, where you're like zero trade value, $4 million plus on my cap. I don't know what to do. Do I buy him out? Do I ship him off to Robida Island and never see him again and LTIR him? Like, what do I do? I think it's going to take a lot to get to that point where the Avalanche can't flip him if they need to, can't switch him to 3C if somebody else elevates. or he just does a good job at 2C.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Well said. I liked our assessment. And like Jesse said, we had a lot of good points. That's just kind of what we do on this podcast, right? So what do you guys think is next, right? What's on your radar? I mean, we don't have to get too deep into it, but maybe some theories or something you're hearing. I personally like LA as a dance partner for the Avalanche here. I know they're trying to unload a handful of forwards. They're working on Pierre-Luc Dubois right now, but I still think they have some moves to make, even if they do get that done. That being said, what are you guys thinking that could be potential for the next Avs target here?
You mean in terms of like bringing in?
Yep. Next acquisition.
I think one of their biggest pieces of business they need to get done next is the Bo extension, because that's going to give you some more clarity on your money. But I don't know. I think they're going to try to solve the bottom six thing. And to be honest, I think it's going to end up being one of Jesse Puljujärvi or Jonathan Drouin. I just think those are both guys who you're buying at an all-time low. You're going to get them at a pretty heavy discount. And at least for Puljujärvi, everything about Jesse Puljujärvi, I'm not a huge analytics guy. I look at him. I try at most to be a 50-50 eye test versus analytics stuff. Everything that Jesse Puljujärvi does well is what the Avs absolutely love in a player. And I just, that's just one that makes too much sense for me. We're talking about how Ryan Johansson, you know, really kind of archetypes the same way that Nazem Kadri did when he got to town. I mean, like, it's almost a carbon copy Jesse Puljujärvi right now versus Nazem Kadri, or excuse me, Val Nichushkin when he first got to Colorado. I just think he makes a lot of sense. The Avs are going to need a couple cheap contracts in that bottom six. Those are two guys that are going to be available. Like I said, they're going to be cheap. That's where I think they go next. I don't know if they're going to get too involved in the trade market now after this deal.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up, because JJ and I were texting before this episode, and I said it's a good thing we're going to have Jesse on, because we could talk about how to build the roster with different opinions. And JJ and I... JJ and I did 30 minutes on Jesse Puljujärvi and Jonathan Drouin just last week.
Oh my God.
Last week. Literally, those two names.
No, but
that is so funny.
So here's the thing with Puljujärvi that I love. So, number one, the big thing that we keep hearing about Ryan Johansson, and obviously you know this if you've watched him play, is he's a playmaker. He needs to play with scorers. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, Val Nichushkin, 7 goals in his first 7 games last year, then obviously all the injuries and everything, still had a decent season, just not a lot of goals. That's a guy that you can feed the puck to. On the other hand, Jesse Puljujärvi is a guy that can put the puck into the net. And, whether you want to put Rantanen and Puljujärvi with Johansson just to kind of get Johansson acclimated, get Puljujärvi acclimated with his Finnish buddy. Like, there are so many ways to go about it. He just seems like the ideal guy to bring in for low cost. It would sure as hell not cost the $3 million that I was talking about earlier. And you can play him at 3C. The thing is, on the left wing, on the second line. The thing is with Puljujärvi is if you do bring in that guy, which I do agree, that's someone they should target because I don't think it's been announced yet. I don't know when the qualifying offers are due, but I doubt he'll get qualified by Carolina at that dollar. The only thing is you got to have a little bit of a security blanket. So you have to have, so if you're planning on playing Alex Newhook at 3C, that's not your security blanket. If you bring in a 3C and Alex Newhook is your 3 left winger, well, now that's a little bit of a security blanket. You have these two raw bananas and Puljujärvi and Newhook, and as long as one of them can be a 2 left winger, you're good. Or maybe that becomes your trade target at the deadline, just like it was in 2022 with Lehkonen. So he just seems like a very ideal kind of player to put in there. I know you mentioned, JJ, you mentioned LA. Those are the types of moves that I can kind of see happening, because I know you texted me about this. Iafallo was a guy that you were kind of wondering about. Makes about $4 million, I believe, as a winger. Probably a little bit too costly for what the Avalanche want, but those are the kinds of players you're looking for. Teams that are trading guys that have a low term remaining on their contract for a decent cap number that the Avalanche could fit in, but the biggest thing with that, whether you're bringing in a guy like Puljujärvi for cheap or Drouin for cheap, or going a little bit heftier in that $4 to $5 million range on like an Iafallo or a Tyler Toffoli, all of this goes back to what is Bo and Byram going to sign for. As soon as you can figure that out, if the Avalanche, if like to me, a good July 1st for the Avalanche is they're working on deals for Bowen Byram and for Devon Taves. And you get both of those guys locked up. You got Cale Makar locked up. That's when you know what you're going to be spending on your defense. That's when you can determine if you want to trade Sam Girard now or next summer to make room for the Taves extension. And that's when kind of, or hell, even Josh Manson, he's not invincible. And that's when you kind of have everything kind of figured out in terms of what to spend elsewhere. And if you're going to spend term elsewhere or just 1 year stopgaps, 2 year stopgaps.
Well, and the Bowen Byram deal also has a ripple effect on Devon Taves. You know, like I've been talking about this a lot over the last couple of weeks on my show. Like I really do. If you don't think you can keep Devon Taves, I think the Avs need to move him this summer. Yep. You cannot let a bona fide top pairing defenseman walk out of your organization for nothing. So you need to get that Bow extension done, because if that is going to price you out on Devon Taves, that's fine, because you're committing to Bowen Byram, you know, kind of taking that role, but you need to go out and get something for Devon Taves, and he should have a lot of trade value. You could get a very impactful top six winger, you know, for what you could get in exchange for Devon Taves. So the Bowen Byram deal is a linchpin to all of this. To throw a couple other names, because I've just been sitting here feeling bad that I listed the same two people that you guys talked about last week. And really, so much of my list kind of changed after the deal yesterday. I really did think they were going to pursue Ryan O'Reilly heavily.
Me too.
I had some reason to believe they were going to go after him, especially with a little bit of extra Gabe money. They were going to throw, you know, I think they were going to throw a little bit of a higher dollar at him for a little bit of shorter term for what maybe other clubs would give him. So that was a guy that I thought was on the radar. And so really, you are down into these kind of like fringe guys. I think Jonathan Taves is another name if you're looking for a fourth line center, if you don't want to go with Ben Myers. And then I think Corey Perry is another guy that would make a lot of sense for this group in that bottom six. They like having some veteran experience down there. He gives you something a little bit nasty. And I mean, he had a 20 goal season 2 years ago. You know, there's still a little bit of offense there. So those are two other guys, Jonathan Taves and Corey Perry, that I could see if they're wanting to get into the little bit veteran market to fill out that bottom six. I could see them going that route as well.
I have a story going up on Monday tomorrow for bargain finds that the Avalanche could look into. And I'm just going to rattle off these names without any of the explanations. Those will be up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Corey Perry, Nick Foligno, Oliver Ekman-Larsson on the third pair, Jonathan Drouin, Miles Wood, Pia Suter, Jesse Puljujärvi, and Max Kontula.
My other defenseman that is just, it's just intriguing is Matt Dumba. I don't know where that number comes in. You know, maybe he's too expensive. I don't know, you know, if you're wanting to mess with your decor too much, does that drop Josh Manson down? You know what? I don't know what that does, but he is another name that I think probably is going to take a little bit of a pay cut this year. And you know, he does things well that the Avs do well, moving the puck up ice, you know, breaking out with his feet, things like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to transition. So get your point.
Okay.
Out.
Real quick. I do really quick when you bring up another defenseman, I do wonder about the decor, because it reminds me of the summer that the Avalanche brought in Devon Taves. We're not really talking about the decor as where the moves would be made. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about that, like, because this isn't just as simple as get rid of Eric Johnson, sign another veteran. Cause we heard Eric Johnson obviously is going to walk and just sign a different veteran. It just feels like there might be room for movement there, whether it's, like you said, trade Devon Taves, which, by the way, I wholeheartedly agree with it. Devon Taves is an exceptional player.
Yeah.
You cannot let that guy be an own rental. This isn't Andrei Burakovsky that you're going to let walk out the door and make $5 million elsewhere. This is a player that's going to get top dollar. When I think of what Dmitry Orlov and people are saying about what he's going to get this summer, Devon Taves mops the floor with that player and would be a little bit younger too. So, you know, there's something to be said about Devon Taves. If you don't get a contract done with him this summer, the Bowen Byram number, Mikhail Sergachev, his bridge deal was 3 years, $4.8 million. And he had over a half point per game, over 200 games of experience when he signed that. And I believe a Stanley Cup as well, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was it was after the first cup. So
yeah,
that's when you're talking about Bowen Byram. There's the idea of trading Sam Girard. And then you go to your third pair. you know, obviously you still have Josh Manson, who you're expecting to be healthy, but then you go to your third pair. Eric Johnson's moving on. Are you moving on from Jack as well? Because if so, you got to
bring him back as your seventh.
That's 100% what I think they should do is Jack Johnson's your seventh, but you're filling in your third pair. I saw Evan brought up the idea of Peak out of Columbus, Andrew Peak as a $2.75 million defenseman. That's an idea. There is, you know, Ekman Larson. I always think of how Tampa Bay has always been that team. When Zach Bogosian terminated his contract with Buffalo, went to Tampa, played good there, and was able to get more contracts after that. Kevin Shattenkirk, bought out by the New York Rangers, went to Tampa, rejuvenated, left. And Ekman Larson just seems like the perfect guy. And because he's Swedish and he's boys with Hedman, you can see Tampa doing that, but the Avalanche can do it too. So players like that, like, I just really wonder about the defense as something where it's going to have a little bit of a shakeup that we're not expecting.
Yeah, you actually transitioned nicely for me because I was going to get into Eric Johnson and walk in at free agency, right? I mean, I guess my question is, where do you see him landing? What kind of team do you think takes a flyer on a guy like EJ?
I would actually, if there was somewhere to bet, I would bet money that it's Anaheim.
I was just thinking that. Mm-hmm.
His stables, wherever he keeps he has a house in Southern California. It's where he lives in the off season.
It's where he beelined it for his cup day.
For his cup day. And I mean, I look, it's tough because Eric Johnson, getting to know him a little bit over his last couple of years, I mean, he's an outstanding individual. I mean, just a you know, top tier human, always great. You know, when you chat with him, always willing to talk. I think he had a huge leadership role in that room. Obviously, he's had a big impact on the organization and the community. He was the longest tenured Denver athlete, not just Av, up until, you know, whatever it was. I actually technically still until July 1st when that contract officially expires. Lot of great things to say about Eric Johnson. He was always the best defenseman on really bad teams. It maybe never lived up to what people thought it could be here in Colorado, but he did, you know, when you go back and look at it, Eric Johnson was very good to the Avalanche and the organization. All of that said, this last season was really, really tough. You could just tell the mobility is gone. He has lost that ability to slide up the lineup. I think he's still a third pairing NHL defenseman, but he can't get up and down the ice the way that the Avs needed him to at certain times with the injuries and things like that.
I would say that goes back a couple of years though. Like, yeah, he had a decent year and it was maybe masked by the Avs being able to win the cup.
2022 was good for him health-wise too. Like everything worked out for him in that one year, which was perfect.
And I thought his playoffs on the run to the cup, building on what you guys are saying, I thought that was some of the best hockey he played in Colorado, that 2 month stretch. Because otherwise, I agree with you, JJ. You started to see the cracks in the armor forming. He revitalized himself for the cup run, and he just didn't bounce back last year. I look at a team like Anaheim because that's a team that is going to have some money. They can give him a little bit more than what other teams can. They're trying to spend money. Desirable location, and it's going to be a little bit of like a, hey, we'll healthy scratch you some nights, load management kind of thing. You can come in, be close to where you live, and you can shepherd it up this next generation of, like, Anaheim has a lot of high-end defensive prospects on the way. Each of the CHLs, so it's the WHL, the QMJHL, and the OHL.
That's right.
The defenseman of the year in all three leagues were Ducks prospects. So, like, you know, then you got Jamie Drysdale. Like, you have a lot of young defensemen coming. Let Eric Johnson kind of shepherd those guys into the league. It's a fun, exciting team. They're probably not going to win a lot of games. I think there's a lot of desirable reasons for him to be there. And then again, they're trying to spend money. They can throw a little bit extra at him. I would be shocked if he didn't end up in Southern California.
The Kevin Shattenkirk plan, who coincidentally he was traded for, right?
Yeah, right.
That's funny. No, I mean, that's a really good point about Anaheim. I just wonder where his head is at in terms of, do you want to join a team? Yeah. Do you want to be contending or do you want to ride off into the sunset?
But, and hey, after all we said about him, do you see a contender really, you know, chips in on EJ?
You want to know what helps Eric Johnson's case big time? What Mark Stahl just did with the Panthers. at 30, whatever the hell years old that guy is at. He's older than Eric Johnson. I know that for a fact. He may have been the draft before or the same draft. So he's around that age. Regardless, I think I was mixing his age up with Eric. Yeah, he's EJ's age. I was Eric Stahl. So he's EJ's age, Mark Stahl. So like, if he wants to go, like, I can see someone like Carolina being like, we have a great defense. We don't got that veteran back there. Like, but if he wants to make the money, and, you know, Anaheim's the kind of team that you could very well see them give him like a 2-year, $6.5 million deal where totally, he makes like three and a quarter and plays 14 minutes a night. The thing with him on the Avalanche, it's simply this, like you said, he is a third line defenseman. The Avalanche play with a lot of pace, which he struggles with. But he struggled, like you said, to get up the lineup. And that's the big thing. The two right shot defensemen ahead of him are Cale Makar and Josh Manson. And you can bank on those two guys missing a combined 25 games at some point. You can do it. Like, if Josh and Cale each play 70 games, that is a success. And that's 24 games where they're gone. So for 24 games, you need your third shot right D to jump into the top four. And that's just not something you could rely on with Eric Johnson anymore. So that's ultimately where the Avalanche are at. We saw them take Sam Girard and shift him to right shot and play with Devon Taves at times last year. It's something he did in 2021 because they, you know, when Josh Manson's out, they're
couldn't
like,
do it. Yeah.
We're going to keep EJ on the third pair for a reason. And you know, they were able to move Jack Johnson up rather than EJ. So that's just the way that I see it with EJ's time in Denver. If he's looking for the cup contender, that's going to give him around $1.5 million. I could see Carolina, even Toronto with Brad Treliving. I could see him going for teams like that. If he's looking for the money, by all means, dude, go to Anaheim, cash out, make some jokes with Greg Cronin along the way. Maybe Jason Nugent comes back. You can bully him a little bit or something. Just hang out with your horses. Like that's the perfect ending to his career.
I agree. I think if he's going to go to a contender, it's probably in like what we're talking about for Jack Johnson, a seventh D type role. And if he wants the money, I think it's a team like Anaheim, maybe a team like Arizona, who again is needing to get to the cap floor, can throw a few extra bucks at him and just, hey, come. We don't really care what you do out there on the ice. We know we're not going to win, so do whatever.
Yeah.
All right. I guess here's a good spot to throw in Superbook Sports, right, Arif? Of course, check them out. They've got a special promo code, WithMileHigh, and they are changing the game. Help your bets stay hot this summer at Superbook Sports, the most trusted name in sports gambling with a direct line to Las Vegas. And now, when you use the promo code MILEHIGH, you score up to $250 with their first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download the Superbook Sports app, enter the promo code MILEHIGH, and you'll get $250 courtesy of Superbook Sports. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Let's get into some draft talk, guys. Of course, Jesse's going to be on site. So I kind of want to, it's not your first draft. You've been to other drafts in the past. I guess I wanted to start with a simple conversation on just the draft itself. Like, is it actually a fun event, or does it seem kind of like it does on TV where it just drags on?
Don't lie,
just
Jesse.
Waiting around.
Is it a fun event? So, don't lie.
So day one, the start of day one is really cool. It is like the, you know, everything's getting going and there's the anticipation and the first pick and, you know, getting to see the kids come out of the stands, go up to the stage. It is cool. By the end of day one, once you're like past pick 15, it's like, all right, let's speed these up. And then day two, the NHL is not like the NFL where it's an event every day made for TV. Day two is, we're trying to get this shit done so we can get out of here. Like, we got places to be. We got cottages to get to. The off season start, you know, we got to do free agency and then the off season's going. So it's just rapid fire and it's just so chaotic. That's why I'm actually like, I'm outside Ball Arena picketing every day for the Avs to trade rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7. Like, move the picks. Move the, because it's just you just end up running from like the scrum area back out to the floor just in time to see the pick, and then you're running back and you're going here and you're going there, you're trying to keep an eye on trades. It's a chaotic event. It's more fun to watch on TV because it's just a lot of running around while you're there, because everything is so spread out. I'm looking forward to it being in Nashville. The arena is situated in a cool spot, nice light nightlife and stuff like that all around. But yeah, no, it's definitely my experiences in the past have been chaotic is the word that I used to describe the draft.
There's some good fan content you can get on people's opinions of Ryan Johansson. I know he was a fan favorite out there. So,
oh my gosh, I didn't even think
just throwing some ideas at you, Jesse.
Yeah, seriously, I'm gonna have to credit Arif on that one.
Yeah, he credit me too.
I brought you on the podcast.
So that being said, Jesse, in the last, I don't even know how many drafts you've been to, but I guess what are some memories that stand out to you that are just, you know, that you'll never forget of draft time?
So my number one memory at the draft, and it's going to sound like a bad one because I don't even remember a lot of the details, but that's part of what, you know, made it so fun. We were the seventh round was either just about to start or it was the tail end of the sixth. Again, when they're at that point, they're just going really fast. So it was either the very, very tail end of the sixth or the very start of the seventh. And the players in the crowd, it's really starting to thin out. And you're starting to feel bad because you're looking around. There's all these kids in suits who haven't been drafted yet. And I believe it was actually the Dallas Stars. I was in Dallas. The draft was there. I believe it was 2017. And it was the Vancouver Canucks. Drafted some Euro kid. I don't even remember his name. He hasn't been back around. But he was right off to the right of where I was, where the media set up. And they call his name. And it was him, his mom, and his dad. And they just all embraced in this really long, like really tight hug. He goes down. And I remember just watching the parents and the mom put her hands on her head. The kid pulled the jersey on and she looked at the dad and the parents fist bumped. And they just sat down and there was just relief. They were both crying. And that image just stuck with me because you could just tell that it was so much, you know, the family had put so much into getting this kid here. And they're still, you know, obviously they knew there was work ahead, but they had sacrificed so much. They had done so much. They had supported him. And it was looking like, you know, we were down to less than 50 picks and he finally gets called. And just seeing that moment for that family has been my personal all-time favorite draft moment. But that's definitely the coolest part is getting to watch the kids come down out of the stands, you know, celebrate with their families and their loved ones, get the jersey, put it on. So easily that one moment, like I said, late in the 2017 draft, was one of my all-time moments as media doing this job so far.
That makes me think of two things. Number one, God, those COVID drafts sucked. Number one, going to the videos of like the blurry, dude. Everybody screaming at the party. I remember
some dude puts his crotch in the shot.
Yeah, Alexis Lafreniere just sitting there with his mom and dad, and that like solemn, they put a jersey on and just kind of like that there was so like depressing to see because you don't get that same moment. Makes me think of that, and it also makes me think of like these kids that are drafted in the sixth and seventh round barely have a chance. This could be the highlight of their hockey career.
Seriously.
But just by getting drafted, like the reality is, look, there are scouts everywhere. So to be an undrafted, we just saw an undrafted player win the Conn Smythe Trophy. So your career isn't over, but just by getting drafted and having not even a foot in the door, a pinky in the door, just to kind of be there is such a huge step for these kids, for these families. Like that's ultimately what it is. There's a player on the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know if you guys heard this name at all this year. Raphael Harvey-Pinard. Does that name ring a bell at all? He played a bunch of games this year, the second half of the season. 34 games, 14 goals, 6 assists, 20 points. Pretty good, huh? Seventh round draft pick in 2019. So, like, you never know who's going to hit. This guy had 14 goals in 34 games. That's a 30-something goal average on the Montreal Canadiens. Like, he was better than Juraj Slafkovský last season. So you just never know who's gonna hit. And he was drafted 201st overall. So sometimes just getting your name called is a huge step. It's still a tiny step, but it's a huge step. And it just means the world to these families. It must be like I really want to see what those moments are like, especially in the later rounds, because guys in the top 30 know they're going. Like it's not the same.
And again, it was just for the one that I was talking about in particular, because again, you start looking around and you start to see the panic and the worry of, oh my gosh, am I not going to get taken? I'm here. I'm in a suit. I've got my parents with me. You know, they flew from overseas. Am I going to have to leave today undrafted? And so to see, to your point, Eric, those kids get called, I'm going to take a hard right turn off of all these very heartwarming stories. You mentioned the COVID drafts. I will never forget. I felt so bad. It was a first round pick. I don't remember who it was. I could find it probably pretty easily. It was him, his mom, and his sister. And the mom jumped up and she was wearing a dress.
Oh, no.
And twice she did that. And I was like, oh my gosh, cut the camera. Someone tell this lady. But yeah, I was like, yeah, this needs to be the last year we do this.
Yeah. They were like 9 hours per round. It was just
right.
All right. Well, here's a shot to that draft table.
I guess let's take a look into our crystal balls, right? Avalanche draft 27th in the first round. I guess any thoughts on where they go? I like how Peter Baugh, I didn't get to read it because I don't subscribe, but I like his direction of looking at history and what the Avs have done in the past to maybe try to decipher what direction they'll go. Do you have any strategies, or do you think, you know, it's almost impossible to nail down who they're thinking at 27?
The Avs, this regime of the Colorado Avalanche front office has shown one thing consistently in the front. They will take the best player available. Regardless of position, they're going to take whoever is the highest ranked player on their board. So I'm honestly not sure, to be honest with you guys, and this is going to be the lamest timeline that if it ends up playing out, I think there's a chance they trade back. You're already so late in the first round. Can I get a second and an extra third? Or I guess I don't even know if they have a third. Can I get a second, an early second and a third or something like that? Yeah, you know, I just, like I said, I think they'll take the best player available. But if they aren't loving their options, I think there's a chance they trade back, or maybe they just move it in general.
Yeah, I remember the, trading back at that time of the year, that's like the Kyle Dubas special with the Maple Leafs. He does that every year, because when you're drafting in the 20s, again, it goes back to analytics. When you're drafting in the 20s, 24 isn't all that different than 39. So maybe there's a team that needs 24 because they have a player they've pinpointed. And if you don't have that guy that is on your chart where you're like, like the Avalanche, when they rushed to draft Ryan O'Reilly that one year, like unless you have that guy, you're probably going to get your player or one of your three guys that are interchangeable.
Exactly.
Later on. I always think back the Avalanche when they traded for frickin' Brad Stewart. They gave up a second and a sixth for Brad Stewart. And then
signed him for a billion years.
And then signed him for a billion years and $1 billion for a very aged old defenseman that just didn't fit. Boy, how the times have changed for this organization. But then the very next year, they took the second rounder, which was a high second. I think it was 31st overall. They traded it to the San Jose Sharks. The second rounder that they got in the Ryan O'Reilly trade, the one from Buffalo, it was like 31st, 32nd overall. They traded it to the San Jose Sharks to bring back those picks. They ultimately used that 31st overall pick to undo the trade. So ultimately, they were able to get an extra second, another second, and a sixth, just by moving back like nine spots, because San Jose had kind of circled someone on their radar. So that's ultimately something that you very much could see. But I wholeheartedly agree. For the Avalanche, it's best player available. No ifs, ands, or buts. That's just the way to go about it. The year they lost the draft lottery in 2019, very well ended up with Jack Hughes. They probably wouldn't have traded for Nazem Kadri. Maybe they still do, and that's your stopgap. They could have very well ended up with Jack Hughes. It ended up falling to number four for them, and we still thought the Avalanche are going to get a forward. They're going to get a forward. They took Bowen Byram. They don't care if Kale McCarr's in the system. Sam Girard's got all this good grace going on. Ryan Graves is growing. They didn't care about any of that. Best player available, it's Bowen Byram, and if that means in 2023 we have Taves, Byram, and McCarr, all that we have to figure out for contracts, and that means we got to trade one of Byram or Taves, so be it. We're taking the best guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why it's hard to look at, you know, the first round projections, even with, you know, Bob McKenzie's list out, which is usually pretty damn close.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard to look at any of that stuff right now and have a good pulse on what the Avs are going to do. It sounds like starting at about pick five, there could be some changes, you know, Mitchkov, if he falls, you know, far enough, that could upset the way that things go in the back half of the first round. He's not going to fall to 27. I'm not saying that, but you know, if that player is available at 10, 11,
teams
that
are
could
gonna
really
start to want to trade. Yeah.
Teams are going to start to want to trade. It's going to mess up different draft boards. Him falling means that other guys are moving up. So how does that affect what's available later? Unless we had a good look at the Avs draft board, it's hard to say. All I know for certain is they will take who they think is the best player available if they make the pick. I am still, right now, June 25th, we're 4 days until the draft. I am still not 100% convinced that they will actually go up and make the pick at 27. So that's honestly my biggest prediction. But they'll take the player that they think fits their system the best. And honestly, if they do pick, I'd be shocked if that kid ever plays a game for the Avs. That, to me, is a trade chip that you move at a deadline here in the next year.
It's Justin Barron. That's what it is. The big thing for me, I'm going to go back to the D thing that I just really wonder about this team is, last year we saw the Montreal Canadiens trade for Kirby Doc. Mm-hmm. And I think of guys of that ilk, that 20 to 21 to 22 year old age, that haven't really figured out the NHL yet. And for some reason, there's this thought in my brain that the Avalanche are going to bring in somebody like that to play on the third pair.
I don't know why.
Yeah, Kirby Doc.
I thought they should have done Kirby Doc last year.
Me too.
That was the dude that I had earmarked for sure.
But a defenseman version of that, I don't know who it is. Is it someone like Boakvist or Jake Bean from Columbus? Is it someone elsewhere? I don't know why I have this weird feeling. And there's zero... This is pure speculation. Like, there's zero sources to this. I know we're three guys in the press box. Don't make an article out of this. But I'm just saying, like, for some reason, you know, the Avalanche right now, their top four, you know, their top four is what it is. And then you got Sam Girard on the third pair, because obviously Josh Manson's on the second pair. And then you have a veteran in EJ and a veteran in JJ. And I just, for some reason, rather than bringing in the next Brian Johansson, I feel like they're going to bring in someone who's young that they can kind of build with and have that next player in the farm system that goes up. Hell, maybe it's Connor Timmins from Toronto, who signed with Kyle Dubas and now Brad Treliving is there. Like, there's something that says to me they're going to look for somebody young coming off an ELC or in the middle of an ELC that they can sign to a bridge deal and just kind of rejuvenate their young career. Maybe the 27th pick is what they use to get that done, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, either way, follow Jesse's stuff. He'll be running around, and I hope for your sake they do get rid of those late picks, and you can hit Broadway and have a couple Heinekens.
Dude, that's the plan.
You should just
I'm gonna go find Joe tomorrow. Like, hey, I heard there's a couple teams interested in, I don't know, like your fifth, sixth, and seventh round picks. That's just what they were telling me. I don't know. You should go talk to them and move those picks for sure.
And move them to next year. Move them to next year. I don't know if I'm coming next year. Speaking of Joe, I know you're probably going to this, JJ. Are you about to transition?
Yep, just closing thoughts real quick. That we don't have to spend too much time on it.
Cool. The Hall of Fame. Yeah. So Joe Sakic in January was added to the Hall of Fame committee. He replaced, I believe it was Bobby Clark from Philadelphia, who retired. Yes. And the way the Hall of Fame committee works is everybody who's part of it, obviously, it's all very, like, there's no information that goes public. You don't know who was brought up, who was talked about. But everybody who's part of this committee, I think there's 25 members. They bring in a name or two or three or four, however many names they want. They come to the table. They give their sales pitch on why this person needs to go into the Hall of Fame. And then you need, I think it's 75% of the votes. I think it's like 20 of 25 or 14 of 20 or whatever the number is. You need like a specific number.
Yeah.
And it is not a coincidence to me that Joe Sakic joins the Hall of Fame committee in January. And in June, we find out that the late Pierre Lacroix is going in. And I'm not coming at this from like an angle of like, it's bull crap. No, it's absolutely the right move. It's a great thing. You know, Joe Sakic has his priorities straight. He's got guys in his brain. When he raised that cup last year, he knew that he had two as a player because of the GM before him in Pierre Lacroix. And I just think that that was such a great connection to put together, because there's no way in hell any other member of that committee was the one that brought up Pierre Lacroix. It had to be Joe Sakic.
Yeah, I mean, definitely deserving. It's just too bad it has to be posthumously, right? It's too bad he couldn't be there and give a speech and accept it in person.
Yeah. I really hope they send Eric Lacroix real quick, Jesse. I know, you know, you're a little bit closer to him, I think, than I am, but you know, I've talked to him a few times in the press box. I really hope they send him out there to be able to accept that award with his family, because that is a well-deserved Hall of Fame induction.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, we've done a couple shows with him. I mean, he's just fantastic. Again, always very generous with his time, willing to tell old stories. We actually had a pod. Oh, damn, I can't remember which game it was from. I'll find it and tweet out the link again. But we had Eric Lacroix and Adam Foote on the show. Oh, and yes. they were telling some stories. I was looking at our producers like, I don't know if they're supposed to be telling these stories about Patrick Waugh and stuff like that. Like, but I was like, hey, I'm not telling them, so you guys can say whatever you want. But to your point, Eric, just a fascinating guy, you know, told some great stories about his dad. We were actually doing a fundraiser for the Pierre Lacroix Foundation. So it was great. And he was actually the first person I thought of when I saw the news break. Just had that same thought. I said, wow, I hope he's the one that goes out there, because I know this will be really special for them and their family. So happy to see Pierre Lacroix go in. I don't know. We had the conversation on our show a couple days ago. Are you guys in favor of we should be inducting more people into the Hall of Fame, or do you want this more exclusive than even it's become?
I would prefer it to be exclusive, but at this rate, it's become what it's become. You know, Marian Hossa's in, Daniel Alfredson is in, Matt Sundin is in. Like,
right.
You know, there are certain criterias that I, in my brain, make a Hall of Famer. Peter Forsberg is a good example, because that's a guy with 700 and something career points. I forget what the number is, but 700 something out of points or games. It's something like that. Whatever many games he played, but there was a stretch of about a half a decade where nobody was as good as Peter. It's like Nathan MacKinnon now. Nathan MacKinnon, starting in 2026, could be a 60-point player the rest of his life. But between the years of 2018 and 2025, all we do when we talk about Nathan MacKinnon is MacKinnon, McDavid, Matthews, Draisaitl, McCart. Like, he's one of the best. That's one of the things that always sticks out to me, is were you one of the best? Which is why, and not to bring him down, I don't love the idea of Pierre Turgeon, because I don't think he ever was that. I really genuinely don't. It's a guy that has a lot of points and a lot of good numbers and a point per game pace, but he was never like Andrew Brunette was a point per game guy for two seasons. So it was never a guy that stuck out to me in that sense. Obviously, there's a lot of flack right now for Alex McGillney not getting in again. That's a player that should be in. But I am of the belief that it should be a little bit smaller. Someone like Marian Hossa, Daniel Alfredson, even Matt Sundin. These are great players, but they were never Nathan MacKinnon, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews.
See, I suggested that if you want to have all of those guys in, like, you know, a lot of the guys you're just listening, you should do an NHL Hall of Fame. Then have the Hockey Hall of Fame be more exclusive. These are for the all-time greats, the biggest contributions to the game, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if at that point you're getting too in the weeds, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm
with you. There,
it should be a little bit smaller.
Against Pierre Turgeon. Good for him. You know, I'm not saying he isn't deserving or, you know, whatever. But I'm with you. When I think back to being a kid, the Hall of Fame was like Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, you know, Patrick Waugh going like, that's what, right. That's what I remember. Then you just get some of these names. You're like, oh, well, yeah. I guess. Sure. Yeah. He was good. Yeah. He had good years.
So, see, I don't care. I say let in as many people as you want.
Exactly. No. Exactly. Yeah. I don't care enough for this to be something that I'm going to get really pissed off about. It's just an opinion that I have. But again, I'll never tweet about it or waste time on it, because it's just a fun thing for fans. Like, it's an arbitrary.
It's a celebration,
thing.
Right?
Yeah,
as many people, if you deserve to be celebrated and you want to come celebrate, right? I'm never the person to kick people out of the party just because. Like, come party. Everybody's invited to my party.
I'm all for the fun that you have with like the certain groups that go in at the same time, and just making it more, you know, There's a entertainment factor to it. Putting in Luongo with the Sedins, putting in, I think it was Rob Blake and Peter Forsberg, maybe.
I think there that sounds right.
Two Avalanche guys the same year. Yep. Next year, Pavel Datsyuk is available. You know, he's someone that's up for the Hall of Fame. Is he going to get in because he's Russian? Who the hell knows with the NHL now? But Pavel Datsyuk, you know, given who they just put in this year, I'm like, okay, great. Throw Chris Osgood, crumple him up with Pavel Datsyuk, let him go in together. Those are two boys that like. So, like, I do like when they do things like that. It, in the end, it's a celebration.
Well, and to your point, JJ, like, I have an opinion on it because we're on a talk show and that's what we're talking about. But at the end of the day, like, I don't really care. I've been to the Hall of Fame. It's cool. There's a lot of cool stuff to see there. I actually am a little bummed I didn't get out this last year to see the Avs Stanley Cup display.
Oh, yeah.
With all the game used stuff and champagne bottles and all that stuff. But
I was in Toronto. I didn't even think of that.
Oh, really? Yeah. My kind of last thought, you brought it up and I wouldn't have been able to sleep tonight without looking at it. Peter Forsberg, 708 games played, 249 goals, 885 points.
That's what sounded wrong. The 700 something, was it the games or the points? That's where it was confusing.
636 assists.
Just wild stuff. Just crazy. He was, I believe, Connor McDavid, I think, has surpassed him now. But before Connor McDavid became Connor McDavid, I think Forsberg was fourth in the NHL, in NHL history in assists per game. I think it was like Lemieux, Gretzky, and Bobby Orr ahead of him, and then Peter Forsberg. And now Connor McDavid's ahead of him.
Yeah.
Like, that's how good of a playmaker that dude was. So, yeah, that's a Hall of Fame caliber player because for 5 or 6 years, maybe a little bit longer, Peter Forsberg was one of the best. And then he signs with Philadelphia. And I don't know if you guys can go back in your memory bank to 2006. That first 4 months of the season, he played on a line with Simone Gagné and Mike Knuble in Philadelphia. Gagné had like a goal per game, and Peter Forsberg had like 2 points per game because they were just feeding each other, you know, with a million power plays coming out of lockout. Like, he was still in that age, coming off of the, you know, the season he played with Modo, coming off of his injury in 2004. He was still one of the best, and this was as his career was winding down.
So there's hope for Ryan Johansson, you're saying?
A little bit, yes.
I mean, absolutely. There's a chance.
Right on, boys. Well, great podcast today. Jesse, thanks so much for hanging out with us and being one of our stops on our summer tour.
Yeah, no, of course. I told you guys a few weeks ago, we want to have both of you guys on our show too. So when we get back, we'll have you guys on. If you guys need anything this week, just let me know. I'll be happy to chat with you guys from Nashville. But appreciate you guys having me on. I always love chatting with you guys in the press box, so it's nice to get it down recorded sometimes, eh?
Yeah, I like to think you two are my line mates, right? Arif sits on my left, you sit on my right, and I'm the center. So
we got Megan also. It's great.
We got Megan and Ryan playing D.
Yep.
Ryan talking about music and annoying the shit out of everybody sometimes.
Right on, guys. Well, if you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone. We out here.